This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Well, 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 sex, health and well-being in our LGBTR communities.
Presented by Joy sponsor VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council.
This is Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal and I'm joined in the studio by Michael and behind the panel this week, the lovely Liam.
Ahoy.
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy.
Good evening, how are we?
Doing really well.
Doing really well. Look, it has been a great news week, but before that, this is Well, 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 where we talk about all things sexual health, health and well-being, basically health and well-being and all that goodness for the LGBTI community here in Melbourne and further afield. This week, we are continuing our World AIDS Day series. Last week was the first episode. We did HIV then, now, and into the future. This week, we're going to be looking at HIV now and the current landscape that we're facing. We'll be joined this week by PLHIV advocate and activist, the co-founder of the Institute of Many, or as Tim, as many of you know, Nick Hollis. And later on, we'll be talking to HIV clinician, researcher, and all-around absolute legend, Associate Professor Edwina Wright. But before we speak with them, the marriage equality survey results were announced on Wednesday morning by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. A very big moment. We did a whole series, Liam. You know, I feel like we talked about more marriage equality than we could absolutely handle.
I've been working on marriage equality for nothing but marriage equality for the last 3 months.
What are you going to do now?
I don't know.
Liam's life is officially over.
Oh, my God.
Liam will now do cross stitch. Where he'll be retiring.
Oh, I could probably learn how to do that. That'd be fun.
But look, we got the results. 61.6% of Australia, yes, voted yes. A massive win, and a 79.5% participation rate.
Yeah.
What I thought was really great about some of those statistics that came up is that they said, while, you know, certain people will say it was young people, 18 to 19 year olds came out in droves. That was awesome. Victoria, big win for us.
Yeah.
We are the highest participation rate of any of the states.
No big deal, though.
And the highest percentage of a yes vote with 64.9%. Australian Capital Territory was holding it down for the territories.
Which is not unexpected.
Yeah.
The ACT has always been very left-leaning.
Mm.
So it's kind of expected that Victoria, the most progressive state, and ACT, being a very progressive territory, voted that way.
Was anybody surprised that New South Wales came in at the bottom at 57.8%?
I was sure it was going to be Queensland.
Yeah, I was almost certain it was going to be Queensland.
See, and I always bring this up when we talk about regional and rural episodes about health and well-being and whatnot, but I think we are pleasantly surprised by how people in regional and remote areas, and we kind of classify a lot of people in Queensland as being that way, and good on them. And, you know, Western Australia was great as well, both at 63% in WA, 60% approval in Queensland. Amazing result. We're very happy, but we're not there yet.
I was going to say, only one electorate in Victoria had a majority no vote.
It was a slim majority.
Yeah, the electorate of Caldwell, which is in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, around Craigieburn.
Yep. And I think, you know, the 61 is like the perfect number in a way, because we had Tony Abbott carrying on about, you know, a 40% no would be a moral victory.
Well, you don't even have that now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
By Felicia.
You have 38.4.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think, as I said before, this is an important step in the right direction. On the marriage equality series, we talked to Tian and Brady, and he said, you know, this isn't the process that we wanted, but this is the process that we've been given. And, you know, we had a win even under that, which is great.
Yeah, and I think the thing that excites me the most is, as much as this whole process sucked, we now have proof that the majority of the country is on our side, that they... You know, they accept us and they accept our relationships, and they haven't let the fact that previously they thought we might be icky or immoral to get in the way of giving, of showing support.
And while there's been a lot of no vitriol and misdirection and hate being spewed around the country, it's been really amazing to see people come out of the woodwork that you wouldn't ordinarily expect, or even just like close family and friends that... You know, you just assumed maybe they were a yes, or you assumed, oh, they'll vote no. But then they tap you on the shoulder and go, hey, I voted yes. I sent my survey back. It was really lovely, as well as seeing all the massive posters all around town.
And I don't want to keep barking on about that this is one step in the right direction. But I do think that to that point, and what we've talked about on the show before, is that we are going to still see a little bit of that vitriol, because there is going to still be people that want to undercut that result. We've already seen Lyle Shelton kind of give his kind of speech earlier in the week. And I think that we do need to keep in mind, we need to look after our own mental health. I've even seen, I think one of the things that, you know, when we were actually in the Joy Studios looking at the result on Wednesday, and we did see some people even sort of saying, yeah, but I've got 38% of this country that doesn't approve of me or doesn't. And I think we just need to be able to make sure that we keep that in check. And I think also recognize that this is a process.
Yeah.
And that even changing the minds of people is a process. And this is a promising step forward, but there are plenty of resources out there. QLife, Switchboard, VACIS Counseling Services as well. Make sure to reach out to them if you need any additional help. And, you know, I think that's a really important point to take away from that. So that being said, we are getting on to the HIV Then, Now, and Into the Future series. We will be talking to Nick Hollis and Edwina Wright later on in the show. But for now, we're listening to some sweet tunes and some other things. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
You're getting Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. This is Michael, and Cal and I are chatting with Nick Hollis in our HIV Now episode through our World AIDS Day series.
So, Nick, you were talking before about how you've seen, how resilient kind of the positive community is. And I guess we do know that from some peer support that sometimes those experiences of sharing stories, especially around stigma and the stigma that's so very real for people living with HIV, that you're kind of, you hearing other people's stories, you vicariously sort of experience those to some degree. So your feelings of stigma might be escalated, but the resilience that they found along the way also just sort of skyrockets. Has that been true of your experience?
I think that's a really great example of precisely the sort of stuff that happens in Tim and the broader community. I think there's always a danger in an unmoderated, unfacilitated environment for people to just, drop their experience, their stigmatizing experience, whether that's been on an app or with a health provider or just general society, and for things to devolve into a pity party really quickly. That's not particular of online communities. That the exact same thing can happen in a peer support circle. So that's something you've always got to be very mindful of, especially in Tim. You know, we run a 24/7 drop-in center that's open all hours. So moderation is really, really important. But you're absolutely right that in sharing your experience and people reflecting on that, their group resilience goes up. The number one reason people turn to online support networks for PLHIV is to hear other people's stories. And we can certainly see that in the Facebook data of the most popular posts and the most talkative threads. I also think, you know, you talked about, people's experiences of stigma going up by virtue of just hearing other people's stories. I think you can also spin that politically to say that what that means is that people's awareness of the various types of stigma are going up. And if in your particular lane in life, you've maybe never experienced dating app stigma, even though you're an HIV positive person, because you happen to be an extraordinarily handsome, hung white guy online, well, maybe it's really valuable for you to learn that, guys who don't quite look like you are also experiencing different types of stigma and discrimination, not to mention if you're a woman living with HIV, not to mention if you are a recently arrived migrant to this country with HIV.
And I guess with that too, looking at the current issues, so this episode is all focused on the current issues. Stigma, we talk about a lot, and so I guess that's sort of the prevailing issue. Is that fair to say for people living with HIV?
It'd be great to say that, no news is good news on this, but unfortunately stigma still remains, the primary barrier to ending HIV in this country and around the world. I think, though, where we're at now, it's been 5 years since the stigma audit was released, and that really summed up what was going on in Australia, and it's been really useful. Where we are now, though, is that we have certainly helped PLHIV identify the problems with stigma, but we definitely need now to be working harder on resilience, which is the antidote to stigma. That's how you solve it, by creating a resilient population. That's one way of dealing with stigma. Of course, that's useful for enacted stigma. What we need to also be talking about is that stigma is at the heart of discriminatory laws.
Yep.
And, we are going backwards in that sense in Australia at the moment.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, during AIDS 2014, we saw in Victoria, you know, AIDS 2014 facilitated the discussion around repealing Section 19A, which, of course, you know, made the intentional transmission of HIV with a higher sentence than I think manslaughter was at the time. And that was, of course, repealed a year later as a result of that. So tell us a little bit, where are we going backwards?
We're going backwards in a few places and we're not moving on others. Firstly, here in Victoria, we haven't had any movement on the fact that it's still illegal for a sex worker who lives with HIV to work. So that's a big one that we need to be thinking about. And then recently in New South Wales, there was a significant change to the Public Health Act that was good and bad, but unfortunately the bad outweighed the good. They removed this the disclosure requirement, so PLHIV no longer have to disclose their status before sex in New South Wales, same as here as in Victoria. But they slapped on a very heavy sentence around the need to take reasonable precautions. So it's now a 6-month jail sentence and or an $11,000 fine. Now, there's no real reason for that heavy-handed sentence, and it's extremely worrying, as is a trend we're seeing where police unions are advocating hard in jurisdictions. We've seen this happen in Western Australia, South Australia, and in the Northern Territory, of mandatory force testing for anyone who spits on a first responder, including police. Now, you might say that, of course, no one should be spitting on a police officer. That all makes sense. But
that's just good manners.
That's
really.
Well, it is good manners. It is good manners. But what's at the heart of this is absolute stigma, because, of course, anyone who is remotely across HIV science will know that you can't get HIV from being spat on. And the force testing of those people is incredibly stigmatizing, unnecessary, and just promotes, myths and falsehoods, not to mention the fact that it also unfairly targets marginalised people who are going to be more likely to spit on a police officer. And in WA and NT, this law has absolutely been enacted to terrorise First Nations people. Troublingly, we're seeing New South Wales make similar murmurs about that, so that's something to be mindful of.
And something that we touched on, that you touched on a little bit earlier there, but I'd like to come back to, is that idea of reasonable precaution. Around, okay, so we've, you know, disclosure law is changing a little bit, but this, I guess I've got a few concerns around what is reasonable precaution. And I don't know if that's been tested yet legally, because we're now living in a day and age with prevention being biomedical. Mm-hmm. It's not having the physical presence of a condom anymore. Do we know, I mean, in New South Wales, do we know what that looks like?
Well, this is the other terrifying thing when HIV criminalization rears its head, is that there's no way for us to safely and confidently go out to community and tell them what's what, because it requires case law. It requires someone to fall foul of that law and to have their name dragged through the media and through the courts, regardless of innocence or guilt, and have their life probably affected, if not ruined, by accusations of HIV criminalization. So there's no real immediate sense. New South Wales Health, after significant pressure from community, had ponied up with three potential reasonable precautions, and those were condoms, having an undetectable viral load, and ensuring that your partner is on PrEP. Mm. Now, that's
how one does that.
I mean, I like to think that, you know, that we're all very influential people over here in the HIV positive community. But, you know, aside from, you know, a bit of BDSM, open jawed, forced pill taking, I really don't know how we're going to quite go about that one. So it's very troubling. It's very, very troubling.
Nick, I feel like we're going to have a chat a bit more about this, because there's a lot more to unpack around this and where we are going forward. But thank you so much for joining us on this World AIDS Day episode of Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. Can we have you again sometime?
Of course, always.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 presented by Joy sponsor VAC on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. I am joined in the studio now by Associate Professor from the Burnett, Peter Doherty, the Alfred, Associate Professor Edwina Wright. No stranger to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, look, this episode we are talking about as part of our series, HIV Current. And I know you've actually been quite part of it over a long sort of history of it, but we'll focus on the now. Mm-hmm. And I guess the big association that a lot of people in the community would have right now is your involvement with, I guess, PrEP, really.
Yeah.
And I guess just for, you know, when we're looking at, you know, HIV and we're talking about World AIDS Day, we are talking about the broader spectrum of the population. So if someone hasn't heard of PrEP before, what's the elevator pitch, if you will, for pre-exposure prophylaxis?
Pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP in the elevator, is did you know that there's a tablet that people can take that will prevent them from acquiring HIV infection? You can take it every day, or if you don't have a lot of sex, you can take it around the time before and after you have sex, with 99% risk reduction.
And that's, I think, for somebody who's probably never heard anything, or maybe hasn't heard anything in a long time and still makes that association with, you know, HIV equals AIDS and AIDS equals, you know, life impending, life shortening illness. That's pretty revolutionary. And it's been amazing to see the rollout of PrEP. And I guess that's what I'd want to ask you about, is how are we going with the rollout of PrEP-X?
Well, so if we think about Victoria, we're doing well. We've got nearly 3,700 people enrolled in Victoria. We're funded to enroll 3,800. We're close to providing nearly 50% of men who have sex with men who are eligible for PrEP. In other words, their sexual choices and behavior means that they're at high risk of HIV. We're close to giving 50% of people PrEP. So that's great, but we still have quite a way to go. We could get everyone, almost everyone who's at high risk of HIV, onto PrEP if so they wished.
So looking at the current state of things, what are those barriers at the moment?
Well, one of them isn't broadly knowledge. Victorian MSM are very knowledgeable about PrEP, so that's a good thing. Really, to be honest, the biggest overall barrier is that we need to get it subsidized on PBS so that you can go to any doctor and get your script. But what we're finding in the PrEP-X trial is that the clinics that have worked so hard to enroll people into the study are essentially saturated, and they've got, you know, so many people in the study, plus they have to look after people who aren't on PrEP as well and offer them the same fair health services. So what we need to do is to just keep introducing PrEP into new clinics, into new healthcare settings, so that people can go to lots of different places and we can keep pushing the numbers up so that we get even more MSM who are vulnerable to HIV onto PrEP.
So it's, I guess that's sort of maybe the unsexy side of things. We think about the rollout in the community and having that community dialogue. Sounds like we've ticked the box there. So it's really like a capacity building existing services.
I think that's a big issue. There are other issues that are of concern, which is people who are visiting and living in Victoria, especially students from overseas who aren't Medicare eligible, right, and may not know about PrEP, for example. So we need to support those populations. Community and linguistically diverse groups, and Indigenous Victorians. We know that at a national level, unfortunately, HIV rates have risen extraordinarily in the last few years. Mm. And so there are very important populations who we need to engage with, including injecting drug users as well.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to make sure that we're bringing everybody along for the ride.
Precisely.
Okay. Well, and looking at that, we've also seen PrEP-X roll out beyond Victoria as well. And how's that been going?
Yes, thanks. We've rolled PrEP-X out to South Australia. We have close to 500 people enrolled there, and also Tasmania. And it's just gone so well. Both the community and the different clinicians and people involved have been so engaged and interested. I think the uptake has been slower than we thought.
Okay.
And I predicted a very rapid uptake, for example, in South Australia. But in fact, it's the communities there are still learning about PrEP. So I think you'll find in different places there's a lag in knowledge and a lag in awareness, which makes sense. There's a lot of competing health messages out there for people to, you know, don't get skin cancer, don't get diabetes, everything else. You've got to hear that signal. So, but nonetheless, they've done beautifully well.
That's amazing. And I think let's talk a little bit more about that and that in community engagement, as well as, I guess, the broader landscape of HIV. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. Stay with us. We'll be back with Associate Professor Adrian Wright.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is, in fact, Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal, and we are reflecting on HIV in the current landscape, and I'm joined in the studio by Associate Professor Edwina Wright. Now, Edwina, beforehand, we were talking about the rollout of PrEPX in South Australia and Tasmania as well, and you did talk about how the uptake hasn't been as fast, and you sort of said there was maybe a community dialogue had a role there. Was it? Do you see a difference between SA, Tasmania, and Victoria?
No, not in that sense. I think that the community and the clinicians and researchers are close. It's just more about the broader understanding and knowledge about PrEP in the broader community.
Okay.
I don't think there's any tension there whatsoever. And both states have done great work looking at, you know, putting ads on Grindr and things, raising awareness. So it's all been good.
And I guess with PrEP and when you are kind of starting that community dialogue, one of the things that we hear so often is a lot of people that might be a bit reluctant about PrEP will go, yeah, but what about other STIs? Aren't STIs going up in guys that are using PrEP? What do you respond to that kind of questioning?
Well, it's human behavior to block incredible knowledge in a funny way until you have time to really understand
it.
But in fact, what we have is, imagine if we had a pill in the 1980s that if people took it who were going to have behavior that put them at risk of HIV, if we'd had PrEP back then, as a close friend and community activist has said to me, we just wouldn't have had this epidemic. This is the only thing we have. Apart from abstinence, and which I've recently said is not good for you and may not even be a thing, you can't ignore this incredible science. And to use the adage, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And in fact, what people will learn when they do sit back and reflect on PrEP is that one must come in and see a healthcare provider or a peer, depending, 4 times a year. To get a script and also to have STI testing and HIV testing and treatment. And before this, we only had about 15% of people at high risk ever coming back for a second test in a year. And we now have this huge group of people coming out. So it's actually a remarkable opportunity, and it's a wonderful problem to solve. How will we solve this, both with the community, researchers and scientists? Let's solve this. Home testing for STIs. More judicious use of condoms if you're not sure if a person's had STI checks. There's so many things to do. It's exciting. It's a great space to be in.
Also, we were talking about, you know, your career has expanded beyond just PrEP. We've talked about the broader HIV landscape. As this episode is part of a 3-part series on World AIDS Day, in the previous episode we reflected on the early years of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and last year you delivered a powerful speech during the 24th annual Keith Arbour Address at VAC's AGM. So HIV and AIDS has seemed to have played an influential role in your clinical career very early on. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Aside from perhaps the obvious changes, such as treatment options and newer tools for prevention, what are a couple of things that you've observed and how we continue to respond to HIV? Has anything not changed?
Well, I don't think stigma has changed a lot.
Mm.
And I think the same-sex marriage issue has really shown us that we have a lot to do there. And I, as a healthcare provider, I want to just emphasize that the healthcare profession, in all its manifestations, where you have your blood drawn, where you get your pharmacy meds, where you enter a hospital emergency department, we all have work to do to keep engaging and educating people about stigma around people's gender, sexual choices, etc. That is still a big job to do. So that hasn't changed, and we can't really drop the ball for that.
I think that's an interesting point too, because usually when we talk about stigma on the show, we're talking about exclusively for people living with HIV. But you're right. I think one of the things that we maybe forget is, and the debate has really brought up, is that stigma still exists just at a same-sex attraction level, at a, you know, gender identity level. That's an important kind of reminder there.
Yeah, well, it worries me in rolling out PrEP that people who are a little unsure of who they are, or they just keep it quiet that they're a gay man. Or that whatever, or bisexual, that they will have to go and face a healthcare provider saying, why are you having an HIV test? Or what's this PrEP thing? And, you know, that worries me.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's a fair concern. You know, and speaking, I touched on, you were spoke at last year's Keith Arbour address. You had a really great quote there that said, towards the end, where you said, the future, pills can do a lot of things. It's possible to be cured by a pill, but not healed by it. And I think that's a really powerful reflection. And as we draw closer to this year's World AIDS Day, what would you, additional reflection for anyone listening right now?
Well, I guess I've been a doctor for over 30 years, and you know, one always is learning. It's incredible. You're just always learning things that are so obvious once you learn it. They're always sitting there for you to learn. But one of the things that I'm very mindful of, and this is for people who are and aren't living with HIV,
sure,
is that when in life we do things like we're drinking too much, or we're smoking, or we're, you know, have behavior that's self-destructive, or just things we know quite aren't right. One of the things that I've been taught recently is the notion that we do these things because we're trying to manage something. It's our way of managing our lives. It's not that we're deviant or weak or, you know, whatever. It's that it's our way of coping with what is a difficult thing, being alive in this universe. You know, it's weird and it's hard. And so with that, people need to be gentle with themselves and reflect that if they have got issues that they know are under them, they've never really addressed them, do it now, because life is short. And we live in a country where we have Medicare. You can see a GP, be referred to a psychologist, and have subsidized sessions with psychologists to start dealing with issues that may have come from your childhood or your adolescence, because they stay with us for a long time and they will have a big impact on our lives. And if we begin to understand ourselves and heal, in fact, through therapy and et cetera, then it gives us more space to experience other remarkable aspects of life and start new relationships, or start a new relationship even with yourself. So I think that's what I'm thinking about a lot at the moment.
That's a very broad reflection, but an amazing one that really captures, I mean, what we're here on about well, and thinking about the broader health and well-being. And that's, yeah, I think that's great to look at the broader sense, because too often we look at issues in maybe isolation. Mm-hmm. So Associate Professor Edwina Wright, thank you so much again for joining us. So lovely to have you on. I'm sure this will not be the last time. As we hear more about PrEP and the rollout there, or I guess subsidy on the PBS, which mm-hmm. we're, you know, PBAC decision pending. We'll have you on again. But thank you so much for joining us yet again on Well, Well, Well.
You're so welcome, Caleb.
Cheers. Thank you. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. And we are wrapping up our HIV Now episode as part of our World AIDS Day series. Last week, Michael, you led the way with the HIV Then series. And who did you have a chat with?
Indeed, it was great. We had a chat with Jack and Tex, both from VAC, two of our longest serving VAC experts. We had a bit of a look
at. Can we call them elders?
Elders?
They might not like that, but I think
they called themselves elders. I'd have to double check that, but good. I'm pretty sure they did, so that'll be fun. We had a look back on not just the history of VAC, but the history of the uniquely Victorian Red Ribbon and some of the grassroots activism like ACT UP that was going on in the day. So if you're a bit new to the scene or you need a bit of a refresh, I'd definitely recommend checking that out and revisiting one's herstory.
Yep. Absolutely. And there's going to be a ton of World AIDS Day activities as usual. If you want to see what VAC's involved in, vac.org.au. And I'm sure on social media it'll be much the same. And we can link to some of that on the podcast. Speaking of which, we will be continuing this web series as part of the podcast and doing HIV Into the Future next week as we talk to Professor Sharon Lewin and President of Living Positive Victoria, new President of Living Positive Victoria, which is why she's a great fit for Into the Future, Christabel Millar. And
Oh, you know what, guys?
Yes.
Fun fact.
I love it.
This is the 600th episode of Well, Well, Well.
What?
What? Yeah. 600.
600.
We don't look a day over 100.
And if you've missed anything from this episode, or you want to hear it again, or you want to check out any of the links that have been mentioned, you can check it out on the podcast page, which you can find at joy.org.au/well, or you can listen to us by subscribing to us on the iTunes podcast service.
I might also point out, actually, so that's a timely 600th episode, because we actually got featured in Star Observer this issue.
Yeah.
We did, the three of us even.
Disclaimer, we did take a wider team photo with the broader team. It has definitely been, you know, a group effort. The three of us obviously weren't there at the start of it. Elder Tex McKenzie has been part of it for quite some time. But Adam Hines, who's one of the producers of the show currently, Jill Young, Jason Aslin, a few others have been a part of the show along the way to help us get there to 600 episodes. So thank you for to everybody's participation as well. Renee, Jesse, everyone else who's been involved. Carlos, who was there for a period of time. Murray and Anthony as well, who now have gone on to other gigs or even other shows. Anthony's on Triple Bypass now, I believe. So there you have it. So that has been Well, Well, Well for another week. Stay tuned for 21st Century Women.
21st Century Women coming up next.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.